a cuppa and a good chin wag?
The Story has real-life stories to inspire and make you smile.
Weekdays on Vision and on demand in the app.
Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
Most Christians, indeed most people in general, are familiar with one of the best-known parables that Jesus told, the story of the Good Samaritan. And when one of the teachers of the law asked Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" this is where Jesus' reply was so important. And I'm going to read to you this passage, it's only short, out of the Bible, and Jesus' answer to the lawyer who asked, "Who is my neighbor?" And Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I'll reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.'" Jesus then asks a pointed question. "Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." Well, our special guest this morning has written a book about the Good Samaritan, reflecting on the things that we can glean from that very powerful story. Margaret Gossan is principal at St. Maroons College in Marrickville in Sydney. Her book is called Samaritan Journey, Compassion, Subversion and Discipleship. Margaret, a special welcome along to 2020.
Thank you, Neil. It's an honour to be here.
Margaret, I'm surprised, as no doubt you are too, even in the mainstream media, you'll often see news stories about anyone who stops to help, and they're called a Good Samaritan. And it's sort of a part of our national understanding of what it is to stop and help. People say, "Oh, you're being a Good Samaritan." This is something that surprises you too?
Well, it's kind of part of our law, isn't it? There's, of course, the Samaritan law in the New South Wales law, I know. It's part of our common language now. In most countries, you'll hear it, the Good Samaritan law, where, you know, you don't have to stop, but you're willing to stop and aid someone who's in need. And I think it's an important part. I don't know if you realise in my book also, in Malaysia, I believe it is, they're trying to implement that law as well over there. So it's something that people are keen to do and take up.
And that would be very interesting in Malaysia, because Malaysia has like a Muslim foundation to its government.
Right.
And so to use a New Testament story.
Yeah.
And of course, yes, Jesus, of course, is one of the figures, as people in Islam do study. But yes, to have that as part of a multicultural way of thinking about how you help people.
That's right. And I think it's necessary. Otherwise, what type of a society are we if we aren't Good Samaritans to one another, and we don't have it embedded in our law, you know, the need to care for and protect those who are less fortunate.
Margaret, in your book, no doubt you go into all sorts of depth around Jesus and the Good Samaritan, but in the biblical world, as I understand it, Samaritans were seen as traitors of their faith. They were even hated by the Jews.
Yeah. Yeah, they were.
I wonder if you can take us into the way the biblical world saw the relationship between Jews and Samaritans, because that sheds so much light, doesn't it, on the story?
Yeah, it goes back to the Old Testament and the division, but they're not very far apart in their beliefs. It's just that the Samaritans, the Jews had in previous centuries before, had married outside the Jewish culture, and so they were reviled, but they were then known as the Samaritans. And they, yes, the Jews did not like the Samaritans at all. So when Jesus is telling this parable about, you know, a priest passing by and a Levite passing by, they're the two you expect to stop and show mercy. And then to say a Samaritan passes by, it would be the biggest insult to the Jewish listeners that Jesus was speaking to. They were not appreciated at all. They were seen as, dirty, if you want to use that term, to the Jews.
So this was actually so confronting that the lawyer who was in the whole issue asking the question.
Well, he started it all, didn't he?
He would have been absolutely shocked by Jesus' response.
Yeah, and I don't think he didn't want to answer the question either. In the end, when Jesus asked him, you know, which of three do you think was a neighbour, I think he would have responded quite reluctantly to that question as well, to have to admit that it was the Samaritan.
In fact, as we read there in the story, he didn't even want to say the word Samaritan.
So when
we talk about hatred, understanding that first century difference between the Samaritans and the Jews, is that a key, do you think, to understanding just the powerful nature of this parable?
Yeah. Otherwise, you just water down the parable. You need to see it as a shock tactic. And a lot of Jesus' parables were meant to subvert, to, you know, turn over the whole system. So if we're just reading it as a nice story where one guy just happens to stop and help, it's not meant to be like, it's meant to be confronting. That the most unlikeliest person, the one that we revile or detest or, you know, that's the very, very person that will assist us. So Jesus, you know, packed a punch with this parable.
So when we're reading it from our Australian context, if we don't understand hatred between two races here, then we're actually going to miss the point. Otherwise, it's just three people came along. You know, let me tell you the story about three people. But the third person actually is hated, and that makes that makes the parable all the more powerful.
Yeah, that's right. Especially if you put yourself in the position of the man who's been beaten, and to wake up and to see your enemy before you, you know. What are your thoughts there? So, it's meant to awaken us and to knock us out of our little world and our, you know, our stereotyping of other people. So Jesus is saying, get out of all that stereotype. It's boundary breaking, this parable. It's saying there's more out there. You've got to understand people. You can't box them in and stereotype them.
The response to the lawyer answering the question, who is my neighbour? And while we're talking about this in the first century context, I wonder if you've got a thought or two as to how this sort of thing applies to us in the 21st century context. Because as we read that parable, we can miss the point if we don't understand the culture of the day. But how does this apply to you, do you think, to us today, Margaret?
In a number of ways. I think when a lot of us, when you read the word neighbour today, you know, we all think of our next door neighbour. We don't think neighbour as, understanding neighbour as, you know, who is out there. And the other thing with this parable, when Jesus says, who is my neighbour, generally we think about, well, who is the person next to us? Here he's kind of switched over the questions to kind of tell us, where are we a neighbour to others? So there's a few ways we can look at this question, but the whole idea of what's neighbour today, it's not just your next door neighbour or the person you put a fence up against. Your neighbour is basically anyone you encounter, anyone in this case, anyone in particular need will become your neighbour, and the response is, well, how are you a neighbour to them as well? And that could be anyone.
Well, I want to invite listeners to join into our conversation today, and you might have your own deeper thoughts about this particular parable and who is my neighbour. And 1-800-316-316 is our number. Our talkback line is open, and we are talking about this parable of the Good Samaritan. So 1-800-316-316 to join in our conversation. In fact, let's take a call. Dave is in Ballina in New South Wales. Hi, Dave. Welcome along.
Good morning, Neil. And I'm sorry, I forgot the name of your guest.
It's Margaret.
There.
Margaret.
Margaret. Got an interesting bit of a curveball here. Most countries have enacted a thing in their judicial system where you have the Good Samaritan Act, which will give you immunity to prosecution. And I'm wondering how far that can extend in today's present society, because we do have a society that's very litigious, and, you know, I think some people actually pull back from being that good Samaritan for fear of being dragged into court. And I'm actually can be a test of this, because I'm actually had become a criminal because I did something in good faith for no remuneration for the good of my community. So how does that go?
Wow. Yeah. Dave, yeah, very interesting. Margaret, what are your thoughts for Dave here?
That's a tough one, because I do recall writing something about it in the book. But, yeah, there are a lot of people today who are afraid to become the Good Samaritan because, yes, unfortunately, due to legalities, if you do harm to the person in without, you know, meaning to, you could be liable for it. So even though they say, you know, a Good Samaritan, you can't be taken to court or whatever, there are some loopholes there that, you know, could lead you to be convicted of something.
What I did actually harm, and it wasn't actually a person, it was actually a plant, and I became a criminal. So that's how far we've gone in Australia.
Yeah, it is. It's a worry. I know, it's a shame. But that's the reality. But look, I don't think that should stop us from, well, it shouldn't prevent us from continuing to do what we can to assist those. Let's hope the court system and the justice system does see some sort of sense, you know, common sense in what a person does and what their intentions are. But, yes, it's a very difficult world we live in, unfortunately.
This is 2020 with Neil Johnson, helping you make sense of life, culture and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
Our talkback line open, 1-800-316-316. We're talking about Jesus and the parable of the Good Samaritan, talking about what happened in the first century and what can we glean to be able to apply in the 21st century. Margaret Gossan is our guest. She's principal at St. Maroon's College in Marrickville in Sydney. Her book is called Samaritan Journey, Compassion, Subversion and Discipleship. And you have explored all sorts of different characters that are a part of this parable. Let's talk about the lawyer for a few moments here. Margaret, the lawyer comes to Jesus and wants to test him and asks him, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" So here's more context for this parable here. How do you see the lawyer in all of this?
Oh, he's the instigator, isn't he? He just wants to get up and prove himself. So, you know, he's considered among the Jews someone who's very significant, educated, well-informed. So, and, of course, Jesus at the time was a very controversial figure. So for the lawyer to stand up, he's deliberately standing up to, you know, challenge Jesus. So he asks the question. Of course, he knows what the answer is. And Jesus gives it back to him. And Jesus tells him, "Well, what do you think it is?" And, you know, he knows what the response is. But he continues to harass Jesus. So the lawyer is probably many of us today, in a way. We all want to prove our worth, make ourselves look good in front of others, and we have no qualms about putting other people down to make ourselves look a lot better. So, yeah, I think Jesus gives back to him what he deserves, in a way. So.
Margaret, when the lawyer asks the question, of course, his thoughts are, you know, the law instructs him to love.
Yep.
Well, this is Jesus' reply. Love God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbour as yourself. That's the sort of response that we all might say because, you know, if we're doing a trivia test, that's the answer you give, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, isn't it? And they're the great commandments and the second great commandment in the Old Testament. So he was well-versed in that, so that's what you'd expect.
So love your neighbour as yourself. It's easy to roll those words off your tongue about loving the Lord your God and loving your neighbour. All of a sudden, you know, who is my neighbour? That's what we're talking about today. 1-800-316-316. Let's take another call, Margaret. Martin is on the line from Albany in Western Australia. Hello, Martin. Okay. Welcome.
G'day, Neil. G'day, Margaret. Neil, you mentioned that we live in a Western civilization, or in Australia, where we don't really have enemies, but I tend to think that we're actually becoming quite tribal now. What's your thoughts on, like, for example, you've got the vaccinated, the unvaccinated, who are, you know, you've got the left, you've got the right, the conservative versus the progressive. There seems to be quite a bit of division happening. What's your thoughts on that, Margaret?
I'll throw you in the deep end here, Margaret.
I know, I agree with him, actually. When you did say that, Neil, when you did say before, you know, there's not much hate or whatever in Australia, I thought, I kept quiet, but I agree. There is a lot of tension. I agree, tribalism. Yes, the vaccinated and the non-vaccinated. Anything these days seems to cause a division among people, which is a real shame. The religious versus the non-religious. It is there. It might not be so evident. We wouldn't see it as, you know, fighting or wars, but it's implicitly there in the way we just ignore people or in the way we respond to people. There is. And that's natural. It's in every culture, every society, every nation. You're going to always find division here and there and so on. And I think the beauty of this parable is to basically say, well, whatever your divisions are and whatever your reasons for hating another, ultimately they all pretty much collapse in the face of this parable, where Jesus is basically saying you have no right to have any hatred or any borders set up between you and the other.
Does that answer your thought or question there, Martin? I mean, this idea of tribalism, yes, it's clearly something that our society is disintegrating into. And Martin, any more thoughts there?
Yeah, I agree. Margaret mentioned, thanks, Margaret. Margaret, you did mention that it's natural, but I've sort of heard a few commentators say that the West has kind of got rid of a lot of the tribalism, but we are now almost falling back into what is everywhere, and it's unfortunate that we are going in that trend, but perhaps in the decades past we weren't.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. There is subtle. There is a trend where, yes, we are kind of falling back to conservative kind of style here. I don't know. I would say it's provoked by the fact that if you go to one extreme, then you're always going to get a response from the other extreme as well. I mean, Australia seems to be pushing towards secular society, anti-religious mode. That's always going to get a kickback. You're always going to get people who are going to respond in the opposite way. So,
Martin, thank you so much for your call. Our talkback line is open on 1 800 316 316. Just before we move on to take another call, just reminded, and from time to time, this comes up in a conversation about what the Christian position is as we do descend into a level of tribalism. And I'm reminded of Galatians chapter 3 and verse 28. There is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that wonderful scripture from Galatians chapter 3, in some sense, it undergirds the attitude of the Samaritan here to helping the man who was knocked about by the robbers. There's something special in our Christian faith that actually does move towards a unity again, doesn't it, Margaret?
It does, and that's that quote you just gave, Galatians 3:28. That's one of my favourites, and that's the one that I always teach my students as well. Very, very important quote there. Yes, that's the Christian challenge is always to show equality and justice to others. Not that it always happens. I mean, it depends on how people interpret the Gospels and their own attitudes to life. But yes, the fundamental, and we can't deny it, the fundamental teaching of Jesus, of the whole Bible, is, you know, care for those who are less fortunate, the equality of everyone. I mean, the Old Testament's replete with always care for the widow, the orphan, the foreigner, the alien, the one who's considered, you know, our enemies. So we can't sit there and justify our divisions and our hatred, even though we think we can.
Taking calls, 1-800-316-316. Let's take a call from Penny in Tasmania. Hello, Penny. Welcome along.
Hello, Neil. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, Penny.
Very good.
That's good. Look, I wanna give you a story that is quite bright and helpful to those who want to help others. When I lived in Brisbane, I was at a bus station, which I was at often enough, and I always found someone, when I was looking up to see the number on the bus, because my vision wasn't good, I always had someone who would pop up and say, what number bus are you looking for? And I actually had other people join in, and it was fabulous, and I always got very excited and really praised God for that, because that meant I got home safe.
And, great story.
you know, and I even here in Tasmania, I have found the same thing. So people all over, whether they're in tribalism or not, or in any other, there's always someone there who wants to help someone else.
Wonderful stuff, Penny. And there might even be something that's ingrained in Australian culture that understands this principle of being helpful. And we've, you know, grown up over this past 250 years to a point where we can say that these things have marked us in Australian society. Margaret, your thoughts for Penny?
I think that's a wonderful story, Penny, and I like it because a lot of the times we're afraid, we think, oh, how can I be a good Samaritan? And what you just said there is perfect. God is not asking the impossible of us. He's simply asking what we can do to do. And in this case, it was just simply assisting Penny to see what the bus number was. I mean, that's what a neighbour, being a neighbour is. That's what being a good Samaritan is all about. And I thank you, Penny, for that wonderful story.
Thank you so much, Penny. 1-800-316-316. Let's take another call before news. Luciana is in Melbourne. Hello, Luciana. Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
Very
Thank
good.
You so much.
Hi,
what are your
Hi,
thoughts?
Hi, Margaret.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good. For me, I always apply the principle of what Jesus said. Whatever you do to the least of these you have done unto me.
Yep.
So, but the Holy Spirit, it puts it on your heart, whatever, to bake a casserole or to bring flowers or to bring a word of encouragement. And usually there is a lot of opportunities, yeah.
Wonderful, Luciana. Your thoughts for Luciana, Margaret?
I like the way you've connected, Luciana, Matthew 25 with Luke 10. So, and that's another example, as we can see, throughout the Gospels, every single Gospels, and throughout the Bible and throughout all our lives, you know, it's there. The idea of doing good, of caring, whatever form it takes, it's present. And we can't deny it. I think we're just born, I don't think naturally. You know, we've had the movie of that book, Lord of the Flies, where, you know, what happens to people if they're left on their own and they become savages. Or are we, if we're left to be who we are we caring people? And I'd like to argue and I'd like to believe that, you know, generally we're good people at heart and we'd like to do good things for one another.
Luciana, thank you so much for your call. And an interesting concept to say that, you know, left to our own devices. In other words, take God out of the equation and we are in a pathway, perhaps reducing into savagery. And we don't want to think of our nation of Australia like that, but that may be partly what we see as we descend into this tribalism. Margaret, taking calls on 1-800-316-316. Lots more things to venture into when it comes to this story, but let's take another call, though, before we get into some of those. David is in Logan in Queensland. Hello, David. Welcome along.
Hello. Thank you.
What are your thoughts, David?
Yeah, well, the story of the Good Samaritan is a good example of how we are supposed to treat strangers that are in need, but I think it also we can also play the Good Samaritan to the people that are closest to us as well, like family members and friends, you know, we're to be merciful to them as well.
David, what a fabulous point. Yeah. Sometimes we're talking about the big picture outside strangers. Hey, this has to happen close to home too. Margaret, what are your thoughts for David?
Hi, David. I totally agree. Charity begins at home, as they say. If we can't show love and mercy to our own family members and to those around us, then I think it's going to be a bit of a farce if we pretend to show it to other people. And I think to take that even further in regards to family and so on, I think that's where we learn to be good Samaritans, or we hope that's the place the family is considered, you know, the local church, if that's the place where we should be learning about Jesus, about compassion, about mercy, and from that it expands to the outer world.
David, does that answer your thought there?
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Well done, David. 1-800-316-316 to join in our conversation. David makes a particularly important point, and I guess this comes down to parenting. Margaret, the idea that parents need to be showing these Good Samaritan virtues to role model them for our children. Any thoughts around the value of this parable when it comes to our parenting and how our children are being raised?
If I speak from my own personal experience, I think parenting plays a very, very big role in children. As a principal of a school, I see that also here. You can see the kids reflect what their parents are like and what their family situation is at home. I think that's very essential. Family is what we'd call the first church, really. It's where they learn about everything. And those who do come from broken families or families that are struggling, it will be reflected in the way they behave as well. So, yes, it's fundamental.
We've been talking about the lawyer and Jesus' response and a completely opposite response to what the lawyer was anticipating. But there's some other characters in this story too. And you've given thought to the priest who passed by on the other side and the Levite who passed by on the other side. And I wonder if you've got any insights that we might glean from their actions and why they didn't stop to help.
Okay, so this is probably also, you also need to know a bit about the background of the Old Testament and the time of Jesus. So there's a lot of laws in the Jewish faith. In fact, it's a legalistic code. And for priests or for anyone, there's all this whole idea of purification and if you touch someone who was bleeding or someone, you know, who was dying and so on, you could be made impure, which then would mean for the priest they couldn't serve at the temple, which means they had to make themselves absent for a number of days or weeks until they were purified again, and then they could continue there. So you could justify the priest's actions and the Levite, although I don't agree with it, but you could argue the point that they were just following a legalistic code at the time. You know, you had to keep yourself pure and not touch a bleeding person, etc. But the greater law that Jesus does say is to love your neighbour and to love God and to love your neighbour. So which law do you follow? In this case, the priest decided to follow the law of, you know, well, I shouldn't touch a bleeding person because I'll be made unclean. But the greater law is, well, you know, care for those in need. In this case, the man was, as the gospel puts it, half dead. So he was in serious need. So I think the need of a person outweighs any other law or impurity laws.
What a great insight. What about the Levite? How do we understand this character?
I call him in the book. I think he's just one of those ones that just follows everyone else. So the priest did it, so he does it. I don't know. I just had that insight while I was writing the book. But look, the Levite was also expected to, both of these, the priest and the Levite, are religious people, and they were both expected to do the right thing, which is, you know, compassion and mercy. Both failed. And I think we just hide behind one another. He did it, I did it. He did it, so I did the same thing, so on. I don't think we can justify either of their actions. They both saw what was in front of them and chose to ignore the necessity of acting.
The Samaritan himself, I wonder whether, you know, other insights around the reasonings why he might have stopped. Because, wonderful to reflect on the priest and those sorts of cultural issues that were going on for the Jewish priesthood. And the Levite maybe saw the priest go before and thought, I'll swap sides of the road as well and I'll pass by and I'll avoid that whole circumstance, that situation. But what about the Samaritan? Any further insights into why he stopped? Maybe he saw everyone crossing over and was tempted to do that, but then something else. Yeah, so how do you reflect on him?
I wrote in the book that the way they've written it was like he kind of came up and then saw. So perhaps he didn't see the guy until he was right face to face with him and saw the reality of the situation. But I think the bigger word here is he was moved with pity. he let his heart speak. And I think a lot of us harden our hearts. He had empathy, whereas the other two didn't. So I think that's important here. And he was one that was not expected to stop because he's the Samaritan. But he is the one that did stop. And I think the simple reason was he saw the man was in dire straits. And he was half dead, as they describe him. So he felt he was moved to do something.
I wonder whether the virtue of the heart, being moved to do something when you come across someone half dead, is something that you are born with, some sort of innate, an innate type of an emotional response to hardship, or whether something like that might be learned. What are your thoughts here?
It's a very interesting question. I always think about that one. I'd like to believe, I feel that most people have a heart, they have a sense of compassion, they can be moved with empathy. That's my experience generally. But then again, I think it was about a year or two ago in America, they had it on the news where a couple of teenage boys were watching a man in the lake. He was drowning and he was waving and screaming and asking for help. And they just stood there laughing at him and videoing him. So when I heard that story about a year ago, that struck me to the core and got me thinking, you know, are we that callous? Have we become so apathetic about things? I know there was a major outrage about that incident in America and people were in shock about it, and so was I. So look, there may be circumstances where people have lost their ability to empathise, but I don't think you can lose it further. I think you can build your empathy. You can learn to be more compassionate. It's the direction we take in our lives that determine, I think, how compassionate we become or how distant we become toward with others.
I wonder about how far you go as a good Samaritan. If you're empathising and you're standing on the beach, putting yourself in the place of those young people and seeing someone drowning, and you might be saying, oh, well, let's just film that. There's someone waving out in the ocean. I mean, how far do you go to be a good Samaritan? In that case, you might hope that we'd all say, well, let's see if we can rescue the person or at least call for help, because not everybody has the capacity, not everyone's a strong swimmer and a life-saving trained sort of thing. But how far do you go to be a good Samaritan?
Okay, it could range from a good Samaritan is basically anyone who does good to someone in need. So it could be as simple as what was her name? I think it was Penny was saying, you know, reading out the bus numbers to a person. Yep. And it can go so far as, you know, to risk your life for someone else. All of those are good Samaritans. But in the parable, what we seem to read here is the extreme. This Samaritan went to quite a length of, you know, helping this person. He picks him up, he bandages the wound, he pours wine and oil on them, he puts him on his donkey, takes him to the inn, pays for his recuperation and returns. So he spent quite a significant amount of time there. So the question is a good question. How far do we go to be good Samaritan? I think whatever you do, whatever is good, is good Samaritan. But we are always called to do more, or to do as much as we can. We can't just go halfway.
And as citizens, and let's not get too political around all of this, because I'm not sure whether there's a political dimension in the whole issue, but perhaps there is. But how far do we go? I mean, it's one thing, isn't it, to play nurse and bandage a wound. It's another thing to, you know, lobby on behalf of the homeless and the disadvantaged.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about, you know, community action and citizenship and good Samaritanship?
Look, I think each person has their way of showing compassion. I'll just read a quote here from Meister Eckhart, which says, "Compassion means justice." Now, that's quite powerful. I think each person approaches it in their own way, but there are two ways you can pretty much be a good Samaritan. One is, as you said, bandaging the wound, which is things like soup kitchens, just helping a person with their daily tasks, etc. The other one is preventing the wound, and that's more the justice side of things, where you're want to lobby the government or petition the government about certain legislations, etc. I personally, I'm more maybe because I'm an introvert, I don't know, but for me, the bandaging the wound comes easier to me. For others, preventing the wound. So you can't say one is right, one is wrong. I think we need both, but different people, one of these appeals to them more than the other. So,
and in a modern context, you're talking about the man who was attacked by robbers. In a modern context, you might say, what's happening with our policing and law and order? Because if you're talking about prevention, if you were applying that to the Good Samaritan story, you might say, well, if there was more police activity on the street, the robbers would not have beaten up the man and left him half dead. So I guess there's that element, isn't there?
Yeah, but you know what? There's always going to be, no matter how many policing we put out there or whatever, there's always going to be, as Jesus said, you're always going to have the poor, you're always going to have those people with you. So there's always going to be the opportunity to be the Good Samaritan. There's always going to be the opportunity to be the criminals who fight. There's always going to be people out there who are going to be like the police who try to prevent these things from happening.
What about the generosity of this Good Samaritan? Because not only did he pick the man up and he looked to bandage the wounds, poured in the oil and the wine and, you know, and whatever medicinal value that has, but he took him to the inn. There was probably no hospital to take him to, so let's get him a room for the night or a time to recover and actually paying the bill. There's a certain generosity here. Have you reflected on that?
Yeah, it's very generous, perhaps over generous for us. Well, I mean, we think, oh, we can't go that far. So what he gives is 2 denarii, which is like 2 days' worth of employment, so 2 days' worth of pay. So he's given quite a significant amount of money to the innkeeper. I don't think many of us are willing to go that far, but I think ultimately... What we could argue here is money is to be used for the benefit of others, not for our own selfishness. And at the same time, whatever it takes to help a person recover should be provided. By whom is another question, I suppose. But yes, he does. The Samaritan does exceed the generosity we would probably give to another. Which is something that challenges us. Remember, the parable is meant to challenge us. I mean, it challenges us to say, do we really give as much as we should? Can we go further with our caregiving of others? And how far are we prepared to go? How do we use our finances in this world? Do we use our finances to assist others or not?
I imagine that for lots of us, and I don't want to put everybody in the one boat or tar everyone with the one brush, but there probably is a tendency to do the least in the response. You know, we could have finished the story with bandaging the man's wounds and saying, there you go, be on your way. I'm glad I've been able to help. But there's, in your book, you say you need to do what should be done, and what should be done is often a lot more than what our least response is likely to be.
Yep, that's right. And the Samaritan does return. So he comes back, like we would have thought, oh, he's fine, he's taking him to the inn, and that would have been enough in our circumstance, in our understanding. But he does come back and he pays for the bill. What can I say about that? It's a generosity of heart. God is generous. We're called to be generous. And as Jesus says, to lay down your life for your friend. It's a hard call. And being Christian is a hard call. And we've probably watered it down a bit. But look, we're human. I think as long as we try each time to do as much as we can, we can't kick ourselves if, you know, it needs to be more than that. We've got to be sensible as well.
Laying down your life for your friend. When we talk about this Good Samaritan story, you've got the Samaritan and the Jewish man who's been attacked by the robbers and left half dead. Technically, they're enemies. Is Jesus saying something deeper here, Margaret, about who your friends might be or who you help, because here we've got an enemy helping a enemy.
That's right. I'm curious to know when this beaten man wakes up and finds that the Samaritan is the one that cared for him. What would his reaction be? It's a good question to ask ourselves. What is our reaction when we hear that someone who is our enemy has done something good? We tend to be in denial, or we're suspicious of the motives. So it's a great parable to say, and Jesus is basically telling us, you know, put away your suspicions, your hatred, your doubts about others, and be open to the possibility that, look, there is good in other people, whether you weren't so sure about it. Be open to the possibility that others do care and are willing to help.
Margaret, I want to ask you about one word in the title of your book. The title of the book is Samaritan Journey, Compassion, Subversion and Discipleship. Some listeners might be thinking about that word subversion. Who does that apply to?
All right, yeah. And I think the example we were just talking about, you know, the fact that a Samaritan subverts everything, that subverts everyone's understanding here by doing what he did, which no one expected him to do. And then I think also the priest and the Levite subverted people's understandings by not doing what they were expected to do. So this applies to basically everyone, you know. And Jesus' parables were meant to be like that, to call us into question, to ask us, well, are you really certain of what you believe or hold about another person? Are you ready to change your views and change yourselves as well? Because life is not what you think it is, and people aren't what you portray them to be.
Oftentimes, no doubt, here in our 21st century Australia, it's easy to be oblivious to some of the needs that are around us. You take time in your book, and one of the themes that goes throughout your book is the idea of seeing. How important is it to lift your eyes up above your mobile device and see some of the needs that might be around us?
Oh, isn't that so important? I think the two things in the book are listening and seeing, and how we fail. And Jesus always bemoaned it, wasn't he? They see, but they look, but they do not see, so on. We don't see, do we? We just see what we want to see, unfortunately.
And is there some need for a divine encounter to open the eyes, to be able to see some of the needs that are around us? Is this a spiritual thing, do you think?
It's a heart thing, I think. You need to have a heart that's moved. It's spiritual, yes. The grace of God comes with us and allows us to see things as they are. I think the heart has to be moved. I think in order for the heart to move and for us to see properly, we need to have experienced care and mercy in our own lives in order to be able to share it or give it to others.
Well, Margaret, we have run out of time, but thanks so much for sharing your thoughts and your heart. Margaret Gossan.
Thank you, Neil.
And Margaret's surname is spelled G-H-O-S-N. Gossan,
yep.
G-H-O-S-N. If you're looking to get a hold of Margaret's book, it's called Samaritan Journey, Compassion, Subversion and Discipleship. And wherever you're listening to us today, you can certainly Google the title of that book and Margaret's name, Gossan, G-H-O-S-N, and you'll be able to get a hold of that from online booksellers everywhere. Margaret, wonderful getting your insights. Thank you so much for taking some time to share those with listeners today on 2020.
Well, thank you, Neil. It's been a privilege to be on, so I appreciate it.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.